Welcome to another episode of Inside the Magic Studio with your host, Robert Martin, the interview podcast for the best in Magic the Gathering. Thanks to GatheringMagic.com for hosting the show along with Cool Stuff, Inc. My guest this week is none other than Hall of Famer, John Finkel. Considering you started playing competitively at 14 and made your first tour event in 1996 as part of the Junior Series and finished ninth, how much did that momentum change your Magic?
So I was actually 17 when they had the first Pro Tour. I actually, by the way, live about four blocks from the site of the first Pro Tour, interestingly enough. I obviously didn't win, you know, the first tournament I was playing the juniors. I lost in the quarters. I got a $1,000 scholarship. You know, winning that scholarship definitely made it seem like, oh, maybe, you know, now there were going to be these big Magic tournaments. Maybe I could do something with it. It enabled me to convince my parents to pay for me to go to the next Pro Tour, which was in Los Angeles. I don't really know if there was momentum per se. I feel like my first couple seasons on the Pro Tour, first as a junior and then as a senior after I qualified for 96 Worlds on reading. You know, I was kind of, I don't want to say flailing around a little bit, but I wasn't really getting great finishes. It wasn't really till 1997 in Chicago when I felt like my momentum really started to pick up.
Because you were in New York City, you got to join up with the OMS brothers. And according to Daniel, there was John, someone that was very young and had his awkward moments at being at that age. How much did working with them help you?
Steve and Dan, when I moved back here, were my best friends for Magic. I actually lived in New Jersey. I would come into the city all the time to play Magic. I would go to neutral ground. Sometimes, this is going to sound a little funny, you know, sometimes instead of taking the New Jersey trans all the way home, I would just, you know, sleep in Penn Station for a few hours instead and then go back and play some more the next day. But far more often than that, I would spend the night out in Brooklyn with Steve and Dan in the basement of the house that they lived in out in Sheepshead Bay. And coming to New York and playing in neutral ground, playing with the O's, you know, I mean, they were obviously both great Magic players. You know, it's really kind of a lot of my development, you know, period in Magic, you know, really just getting, you know, better. And you can't do that if you're not playing with elite people. You know, I briefly went to a lot of Grand Prix, was with Steve, often with Dan as well. And that really led kind of to the beginning of thinking, hey, maybe I can play Magic and kind of make a living doing it.
The brothers also have been a part of your life since then. And on my interview, Dan, he said Team Antarctica was possibly the greatest three-man team in Magic history. Your thoughts on that?
It's actually funny because Dan is actually at my apartment right now. We drafted today. We were doing some cube because we don't really like Decrash. And Dan, I saw Dan earlier today. We were playing basketball. I'm actually going to see him tomorrow as well. I see a real lot of Dan. I don't see so much of Steve because he got married, you know, moved out far, you know, I guess he's already living out in Brooklyn, but, you know, lives out far Brooklyn with his wife, you know, kind of the two of them. Back to your question, I don't think it's really a claim we can stake to be the best three-man team. It's, you know, the Phoenix Foundation, you know, they had Kai and they won two Pro Tours. We made, you know, we made a top four. We won a Grand Prix. I think we top four another Grand Prix. I think we're an excellent team. Dan is dealing with excellent Magic players. You know, obviously we have two Hall of Famers and Steve and I, you know, I think that the gap between Dan and Steve and Magic is very small. These days, I'd in fact say Dan is almost certainly better. It's funny. I was taking a look. We have a database of drafts in my place.
Really?
Yeah. Paul Jordan used to keep track of it, but he kind of stopped coming in when he had a kid. And it's kind of, we've been accumulating records, but not updating the database for like months now. And I got my sister to write me a web entry database because my sister's awesome. And so I was inputting people's histories into it actually right before this phone call. And of course Dan and Steve are next to each other. And it was funny because I saw that Dan had a record of, I don't know, like 450 wins and 350 losses. And Steve's record was like 200 wins and 240 losses. Yeah, I mean, I think we were obviously one of the elite teams, but if you're talking about the best team of all time, Phoenix Foundation just has to be it. They won two Pro Tours. I mean, there's nothing really else to say.
Well, the reason why he said that is because I said if I put the three of you in a room with any set three teams that you want to put together from here and now, and it was an unknown set, and they just gave you cards and said, play,
And he thought you guys would have an advantage over everybody.
I mean, that might be true. Certainly, as far as my skill set goes, the more unknown everything is, the better. Very narrow set of circumstances, we might do very well. Steve and Dan are also good at kind of adapting to the unknown. Of course, that's not really the way Magic's played, and it makes sense. You know, you're not judged based on the first draft you ever do with a format. You're judged based upon, you know, how you draft a format once you understand what the format is, which I think is probably, in general, a better way to judge Magic skill.
I'd like to go back to Grand Prix Rio de Janeiro 1998.
Sure.
You're in the finals against Steve.
Yep.
Considering the previous week, he had just won at GP Madrid. What was that match like for you?
So I don't remember that match at all. I remember almost none of the matches I've ever played in Magic. You know, I remember some top eight matches, some other matches here or there. I remember probably more from earlier in my career, although I remember obviously the ones that were very recent, but I'm much more likely to remember something from my first year or two than from like 3 years ago. But really in general, I remember almost none. And, you know, the reality is that Magic isn't really like, it's a one-on-one game, but it's not like somebody's an advantage over somebody else. There's none of this like A beats B, B beats C, C beats A. You know, I mean, Steve and I were, you know, had relatively similar amounts of Magic skill. You know, at any given point, one, you know, win percentage would be between 45 or 55%. You know, just because last time, it's like, alright, he won this other coin flip, but I'm still just as likely to win this coin flip. You know, we just played Magic, I'm sure, and the fact that, you know, the week before I'd lost didn't really mean that much. Or the fact that the week before he'd won. I don't think he actually, I don't know if he actually beat me at Grand Prix Madrid.
No, he didn't, he didn't.
He did?
No, he didn't.
He didn't, yeah. He might have been the Swiss, but Steve is a great player, but I knew him well. I'm comfortable playing him. He's comfortable playing me. So we're basically just going to flip a coin. Maybe the matchup is good for one of us and we're going to play it out and someone's going to win. Someone's going to lose.
After being part of the first Hall of Fame class, you made a comment to this day that rings in my head is that Steve's name was measured for the ring and he should be in the next class. It didn't happen. And it took the Magic community a while to understand what his impact on Magic was. And he finally got in. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, obviously I was very glad when he got into the Hall of Fame. Obviously I thought he should have been in for that. You know, he won a Pro Tour where he beat me. He had second in a Pro Tour. You know, he had third in a Pro Tour. You know, he had, you know, a lot of Grand Prix success. I'm not sure exactly how much, to be honest. I mean, we just mentioned first and a second and I guess consecutive weeks. You know, I was very happy when he finally got it. I mean, I always kind of thought that he was eventually going to get it. I didn't think that he was going to get snubbed forever. And I'm glad that finally, you know, the voters did the right thing. And he's in, and that's awesome.
Mark Rosemutter made the ultimate compliment in regards to your skills in Magic. He said you're the most naturally gifted player the game has ever seen, and that your accomplishments are only rivaled by one other man, and that's Kai. And that seems to be a universal thought for most players in Magic. When you hear things like this from people like Mark, what does it mean to you?
I guess the flip side can mean that I'm really lazy. No, I mean, yeah, that's, you know, it's great. It's very gratifying, you know, the legacy I have in Magic. For some reason, I am naturally good at games like this. I'm not sure exactly why. You know, 20-year-old me is almost certainly better than, you know, 34, soon to be 35-year-old me. You know, I'm just lucky that I discovered something that I love to do that really fit my skill set, that's stayed around for so long, as so many great people involved. And the fact that I have, you know, legacy in Magic, it really is gratifying. You know, it's really a part of who I am. That's part of why I, you know, decided to come back and, you know, play in the Pro Tour some. Now I wonder, am I going to still be playing the Pro Tour? You know, we'll still be around when I'm in my mid-40s, you know, when I'm 50. You know, I just don't know.
There seems to be mutual respect when it comes to you and Kai, and it seems you developed a good relationship with him when it comes to Magic. What did you see in Kai that made him so special?
I don't even know what there is to say. You know, he won 5 individual Pro Tours, 2 more with team, you know, 3 more top 8s. You know, he's just clearly one of the best players that could possibly exist in the game of Magic. There's so many things that he's good at. You know, but in the end, right, there's even 2 people who are really good. It's, I think, a lot harder to really tell than people think. Kai and I think our Pro Tour win percentage, they did something there you know, it was about 65% each. And the difference between us and, you know, then there, I think there was actually somebody who's right up there, maybe a touch higher. You know, I think people like Kibler who are at like 59 or 60, I remember him. There are a bunch of other people who are at 60%, and really, between 60 and 65% isn't really that much. It means that one time out of every 20 matches that they're playing the Pro Tour, they're going to get an extra win. Now, a big deal in the long run, it's like watching baseball players. You know, on any given day, if you're watching Barry Bonds and you're watching Jeff Kent, it's hard to really tell the difference. What really shows it is that the sum total of results, you know, the constant excellence, talking to them, I guess it's more for Magic or baseball, and understanding, you know, what their thought processes are, kind of how their mind works. But I think that people exaggerate how much it can really be seen. I think that's probably a minority viewpoint. You know, Kai has, you know, done some, I'm sure had some amazing plays. I'm sure I've had some amazing plays. I'm sure lots of other people, you know, have had, you know, amazing plays, amazing games, or they came out things that you didn't think anybody could possibly win. And, you know, we don't even know who these people are.
The other saying I hear about you, it says that John doesn't lose on day two of a Pro Tour.
I can tell you that's not a true statement.
It's been implied numerous times when you watch coverage.
I would bet that my day two win percentage is lower than my day one win percentage. I don't know. I don't think there's a big difference. You know, this last Pro Tour I just played in, I had probably two losses, at least one loss day two. You know, the Pro Tour before that as well. I lose day twos all the time. I think people like to kind of find narratives or say things. You know, maybe there were a few Pro Tours in a row where I was doing really well on day two. People, again, say things. I doubt that the data really backs it up.
Okay. But do you feel that that kind of presence can affect the way an opponent plays against you?
I do think that in my time, people played worse against me because of who I am and kind of because of, you know, the legacy and the reputation that I have. I don't know if it's necessarily any more likely to be on day two of a Pro Tour than, you know, day three of a Pro Tour, day one of a Pro Tour. I also think that, you know, Magic is a game where we all make mistakes. The mind loves to look for reasons for why we did stuff. So, you know, maybe somebody makes a mistake and they're like, oh man, I totally blew it. I can't believe I made that mistake. And then they make that mistake against me and they're like, oh man, I can't believe I blew that. You know, I was playing against John and, you know, just, you know, I was playing against Finkel and, you know, it just, I wasn't playing my best. In reality, it might just be that after the fact, the reason that was ascribed was the fact that they were playing me rather than playing somebody else. Which I know is kind of a roundabout answer.
No.
But, you know, I think a lot of Magic, it's much more in the long run a game of odds, a game of percentages, a game of averages, where the difference between, you know, the elite players of all time and the very good players, you know, is a 5% win percentage. It's not that much, you know, where we all make mistakes. You know, we all look for reasons why we made these mistakes. And sometimes we, you know, say it's because of something that may or may not have been the reason why. Yeah.
Why did you retire originally from Magic?
Yeah, I was busy doing a lot of other things. When I started playing Magic, the idea of being a professional Magic player didn't really seem like something with a lot of longevity. In 1998, you know, I had a great year, 97, 98. Started to get really into poker. And poker was kind of the thing that I was the most obsessed with right then. So I started to play more poker and less Magic. I still played a lot of Magic, but not as much. I'm pretty sure around that time I was also playing, you know, StarCraft and Diablo. I was playing a lot of other games. But it was 98 when I really got into poker. You know, 99 I had an okay season. I was still playing some. Now, 2000, I did really well in 2000, but there was, I don't think I was necessarily better in 2000 than I was in 99. I did decide that I was going to put more effort into Magic over that summer. These are narratives that people love to tell, and then I won Nationals, I won Worlds, but, you know, in each of those tournaments I was probably at absolute most 5% to win. You know, and you know, sometimes the person, you know, who wins U.S. Nationals wins Worlds, but it's not like I rededicate myself and therefore I won. It's like I rededicate myself, maybe move percentage from 3.5-4% to 5%. You know, then in 2000, right about the time I got blackjack and poker, you know, and I still had like a couple of decent seasons in Magic there, even though I wasn't really testing as much as I should. I mean, you can really see it because there's a real split in my finishes. Eight of my top eights were in draft, and two of them were in constructed. Well, I will say seven at this period, because Kuala Lumpur was much later. Oh, one I did okay. Oh, two I had a good season. Oh, three, not so great. And right around then, at the very beginning of oh, three, was when I also started to get involved in doing some sports betting as well. You know, I was betting on sports. I was playing blackjack. I was playing poker. You know, and Magic, I had a lot of competition. You know, 04, I think I played a couple of the pro tours. I wasn't really, you know, I didn't do so hot. I think I ended up being sure my match percentage was 50% that season, although not a huge number of matches. And, you know, at that time I just didn't really have the time for Magic anymore. And so it kind of fell onto the back burner. And I guess I retired. It wasn't that I ever said, oh, hey guys, guess what, I'm retired. It's just that I stopped going to these, you know, to the pro tours.
What drew you back?
So, there were a couple of years where I played, you know, very little Magic. Meriden Block, I played a little bit with the first set, but I'm pretty sure the Affinity Pro Tour was the first constructed Pro Tour after I stopped going. I didn't play at all over Champions Block. And actually, right after that, I was at the Hall of Fame. I remember that they sent me a box of all the sets that they currently had in print in the mail. Maybe it's a couple boxes, I don't know, but there's some Ravnica in there. And I just said, oh, I'll draft them with my friends, and it was fun. And so I did that, and then I decided, okay, you know, I like drafting, so I drafted my friends. You know, part of what happened with Magic 2 was it kind of started to feel more like a job. You know, playing Magic well, especially constructed, can like be a lot of, you know, going to all the tournaments. I remember when the first time they made kind of up the number of Grand Prix, the points from Grand Prix. I think that this was like around 99, 2000, and I realized that I wasn't going to go to all these Grand Prix. I wasn't going to be Player of the Year ever again because I was just not going to play enough tournaments. And that also kind of, I think, pushed in the direction of feeling kind of more like a job and like a little bit of grind rather than I just love to do. And then after a few years off just drafting my friends, I kind of, you know, rediscovered the fact that I did really like playing Magic and it's an excellent game. And so, you know, I'd go to the draft pro tours. You know, I went to the Ravnica draft pro tour. I didn't do well, although I actually did pretty well drafting that format overall, you know, with my friends. And, you know, my friends here are actually, you know, an excellent group of Magic players. My win percentage in our database is lower than my win percentage on the pro tour. And the Ravnica Block Pro Tour was in 06, the draft one. I don't remember if I went to draft Pro Tour in 07, maybe not. And then I went, you know, 8 to Kuala Lumpur, where, you know, I ended up winning. and that was the last of the all draft Pro Tours. You know, I didn't want to go to constructive Pro Tours or these mixed Pro Tours. It was a ton of work. I was totally disconnected from constructed Magic. I was still busy with lots of other stuff. So yeah, so I just didn't go to Pro Tours again for a while. Oh, and then I guess when I came back, it was about a year and a half ago, you know, they're having the Pro Tour in Philadelphia. I was like, all right, Pro Tours in Philadelphia, it's awfully close. So yeah, I talked, I don't remember who it was, I talked to first, I don't remember, but I, you know, ended up working with Zvi and, you know, that whole group of people. You know, I talked to Zvi and got in with people he was working with, who included others like Sam, Tom Martell, who I was already friends with, a bunch of other people. And I did pretty well in Philadelphia. I ended up drawing with Tom the last round. We both ended up top 16. After that, they had Worlds in San Francisco. My sister just moved back there from New York. She'd been postdocing here at Columbia. So she had just moved back there. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'll go to San Francisco, I'll visit my sister and play at Worlds. You know, I didn't do so hot at Worlds, but the next Pro Tour was in Hawaii in the middle of February. And I was like, all right, you know what? I'll go to Hawaii in the middle of February to play Magic because, you know, it's warm and beautiful.
Yes.
And, you know, I ended up making it to semifinals there. And then, you know, it was, I was pretty close to making platinum. All I had to do was get three extra points anywhere. I was in contention for player of the year, making the players championship. So I decided to go to Barcelona. I made top eight there again. Ended up qualifying for the players championship, getting platinum the whole next season. So yeah, so then, you know, just kind of one thing led to another. I ended up going to Players Championship in Seattle.
Yeah.
Pro Tour in Seattle. Pro Tour in, you know, in Montreal. This season I did actually go to two Grand Prix. Interestingly enough, I actually made both Grand Prix. and then left on day two.
Why is that?
One of them was Philadelphia again. It was nearby. And this was right when Sandy was coming in. I was, I want to say X and three, I think. I think I could have made top 16. I probably couldn't have made top eight. And there was a car that was driving back to New York. And I really didn't want to accidentally get stuck in Philly over Sandy. And if I couldn't make top eight, I wasn't really that excited anyway.
Okay.
So I headed back, and then in Atlantic City, I had something I was supposed to do back in New York. And I was 7-1-1, they cut. And then I lost the next round to be 7-2-1. And if I'd been 8-1-1, I would have stuck around, but, you know, it's 7-1-1, at 7-2-1, I just decided, you know what, I'll go back to New York and do the thing I'm supposed to do rather than just staying there and having to go undefeated, you know, to make top eight.
You just talked a little bit about a team SCG Black for Pro Tour events. What's the best part of being a part of a unit that big?
So I guess there are two ways to answer it. I like the guys. I like playing with them. I find it fun. I find it interesting. You know, they're great teammates. There's a lot of camaraderie. There's a lot of working together. That's kind of on like a personal level. On a, you know, talk about more about in terms of a benefit, you know, at tournaments, it's huge. I think it's way harder to do well at a Pro Tour now if you're not one of a relatively small group of people than it used to be. The institutional advantages to being in a group like that are just huge. The amount of great deck builders that we have, I mean, we have two of the top five probably deck builders of all time in Sam and in Zvi.
I want to talk about that real quick since you brought that up.
Yeah.
Sam has designed some of the best decks in the Pro Tour with your team. Tell us a little bit more about Sam and why the Magic community may not appreciate what he does.
Literally the fact that Sam Black exists is probably one of the major reasons why we're talking here right now. But it really helps me a lot. You know, it's certainly probably more than it helps him, although I think he gets a lot of benefits out of it as well. You know, just going to these tournaments and playing one of the best constructed decks, it's just huge. I mean, since I came back, I played in 5 Pro Tours. So I played in the Worlds. I did not do well there. In Standard, we didn't have a deck we really loved. I played a multicolor control deck that Chapin built that I don't think was that great of a deck, and I wasn't super experienced with it. I did poorly. I don't know, maybe 2-4. And then I extended. I went 3-3 as well, playing Storm. And maybe I shouldn't have. I was out of contention. I actually threw away a match, which, you know, I was out of contention, but it still sucks. But besides that, at all the events, my constructive record has been phenomenal. Well, in Philly, I played a deck that it was maybe a little bit more, you know, my deck. I was the one who initially, you know, said maybe we should play Storm, but who had kind of championed and worked on it. And I did well there at 8-1-1. Then the next two tournaments, I played decks that Sam built. You know, I went 7-1-2 and 7-1-2. You know, I played Storm again in Seattle. I went 8-2. And then this last deck, which I honestly think was the worst Sam Black deck that we've played in a Pro Tour, even though it won the Pro Tour, you know, I went 6-3-1. Oh, and I've even mentioned the fact that when I went 8-1-1 in Philly with the Storm deck, Sam was playing his own Infect Blazing Shoal deck in May Top 8. So, I mean...
You didn't like that deck?
So before that tournament, I didn't really know Sam that well. We were kind of, the group was maybe a little bit more fragmented than we have been since then. We've really gotten together in the same place, all of us. I thought Sam's deck was also excellent. You know, I think I probably couldn't have gone wrong. But the last 4 times that people have played Sam's deck in a Pro Tour, you know, someone made top 8 with it. And on 2 of those occasions, 2 people did. I mean, that's basically unprecedented.
Give you an added advantage.
Oh, it gives me a huge advantage. I mean, one of my biggest weaknesses, you know, is always the fact that I didn't do a ton of preparation. I was always a very good in-game player. And, you know, there was a point at the beginning when I was, I think, a pretty reasonable deck builder. You know, it's hard, I think, to develop new decks when you're not playing Magic all the time and totally plugged into the community, which I'm not. Yeah, I mean, there's just nothing better for someone like me than to have at my disposal, you know, deck builders of Sam's caliber. You know, it's like all of my weaknesses are shored up. So yeah, I mean, it's huge. You know, you use one of the you know, biggest reasons why I've, you know, managed to do so well this last season on the Pro Tour. It was actually, I think it was actually my highest win percentage of any of my season on the Pro Tour. And I was definitely a better Magic player, you know, when I was 19, 20, 21, 22 than I am now. You know, my brain was a little quicker. If I could get 22-year-old me to play all my Magic, you know, my Magic matches right now, you know, I would do that.
That's a really good question. I'll ask you about that. If 22-year-old you had Sam Black helping you build decks back then, what could you have possibly done?
I'd like to think I could have made a few more constructive top eights. If I was working with, you know, Sam or Zvi.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I mean, we have other great deck builders as well. You know, we have Kunio, we have Chapin, Reed is, you know, Reed Duke, I feel like he's going to definitely, you know, make some top eights soon. He's a great player. I mean, we have just so much deck building talent.
Right.
And if I'd had that back in the day, or even if I'd been a little bit less distracted by other things, and I mean, those distractions, I'm probably happy about, you know, I'm very happy with where things have progressed in my life, and it probably wouldn't have happened that way if I'd not done these other things and just played Magic. Yeah, I mean, it would have been great to walk into, you know, Magic tournaments with really good constructed decks rather than playing kind of, you know, whatever mediocre decks I was playing.
We've seen a lot of players over Magic history that do amazing thing in Grand Prix events, but their success never translates into the Pro Tour. Perfect example of that was a gentleman that just made his first top eight in the Pro Tour, and that's Owen Turnwall. Why is it so difficult to succeed on the Pro Tour?
All right, let me start over.
That's fine.
There are a lot of Grand Prix, and there aren't really that many Pro Tours. You have to get somewhat lucky to win or to top eight any of these tournaments. And you go to Grand Prix, and maybe the competition's a little bit weaker. You know, someone like Owen, who I think, by the way, is an absolutely phenomenal player. Like, he's top tier. I've been playing with him the last two tournaments, and he's almost certainly a better, you know, pure raw Magic player than I am these days. You know, he's the advantage of, you know, 12 years on me or whatever, or vice versa. You know, the fact of the matter is, okay, so maybe he's going to win 65% of his matches in a Pro Tour, maybe 70% Grand Prix. All right, and in a year, maybe he plays in 10, 12 Grand Prix and 3 Pro Tours. Well, that's a lot of opportunities to make top 8. But even if he only plays in 6 Grand Prix, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, you have to get really lucky to make the top 8 of a Pro Tour. You know, I went last Pro Tour, I went 10, 5, and 1. I won 2/3 of my matches. That's basically probably higher than anybody's expected win percentage in Magic tournament. But in order to make the top 8, you have to, you know, go 12, 3, and 1.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one guy goes 10-5-1, 10-5-1, and somebody else goes 12-3-1, you know, 8-7-1, and one of them, you know, oh, we made top 8, the other guy put up 2 top 50 finishes. Yeah. But in reality, they probably played Magic equally well. One of them just got kind of a little bit luckier as to how his wins were distributed. I think that really what you're seeing there is more of just the way statistics work.
Mm-hmm.
That there are going to be some people win a game like Magic with this much variance where you have to, you know, not only have to win a high percentage of matches, but you have to win an even higher percentage in one tournament, that some people will do, you know, very well in a couple of tournaments and they'll, you know, not end up making a Pro Tour and maybe top 8, and then maybe at one point they'll make 2 top 8s in a row. It's just going to be the way these things are distributed. You know, there'll be other people like someone like Josh Rabbit, who I played a lot with in New York and think is another absolute top tier Magic player who's, you know, never really had very much of a Pro Tour success and still has to win qualifiers. You know, they're just going to be people like that.
You brought up Reed Duke, and at the Players Championship, he didn't exactly have one of the best records, but he bounced back from it by winning the Star City Games Invitational and doing real well in GPs and doing well in the Pro Tour. Can an event you're expecting to do great things at and fail, can that change your attitude and affect you how you play better for the future?
I think mostly no.
Okay.
I think maybe a little. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Maybe some of them decide that they're going to test a little bit harder or pair a little bit more. But it's not like, Reed, for example, didn't prepare for the Players' Championship. I mean, the reality is that we had 16 people who probably had, you know, again, to go to a theme I keep harping on here, you know, win percentage against each other close to 50-50. And when you have, you know, 16 people playing against each other in coin flipping competitions, well, you know, the distribution is going to work out that somebody's going to have the worst record. They're going to be 4-12 or whatever. Or I guess there were 12 rounds, so maybe someone will be 3-9. That's just the way it's going to be. You know, when you flip 12 quarters, if you do it 16 times, and one of them you only flipped heads 3 times. All right, great. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that Reed was, you know, any worse or hadn't really dedicated himself enough and needed to, you know, push on or do anything else. I mean, I do think his cube draft that we watched could have probably used a little bit of work, but, you know, Reed's an excellent Magic player. So the very fact that he made that player championship means that he was probably going to be among the best, if not the best player in this, you know, this Star City Invitational. To be honest, I have no idea who's playing in it. There are probably some other top players.
Yeah.
So, like the Pro Tour, it's hard for any one person to be more than 5% to win the tournament. And 5% is maybe a little bit generous, but, you know, Reed was probably one of those people, you know, who had that 5%. And if it wasn't that, it would be something else.
You've seen the evolution of Magic from a spell-based system to more of a creature-based system. Was there a more of a favorite time in Magic for you as a player?
I did prefer the way Magic, I think, used to be a little bit more. I think it's maybe a little bit less popular, but I liked when Magic was a game of incremental advantages where, you know, getting a small edge here or a small edge there, it added up, and over time you'd kind of, you know, accumulate victories that way. You know, or of course there are still, you know, basic like aggro themes and, you know, you can play aggressive decks. You know, there are other types too, but now I feel like kind of ramped up a lot of the powers, especially the powers of threats, you know, not just creatures, but planeswalkers as well. And it's made Magic a much swingier game. I think I love it. I think it's become maybe even more of an issue in Limited, where when the creatures are that much better in their removal, if you have a bit of like a weak or slow draw, you have a little too much land or a little too little land, then the creatures are hitting you for more, you're falling further behind. I don't love the kind of Magic of people throwing haymakers, you know, as opposed to getting card advantage here, getting a land advantage here. But, you know, I think that one of the things that Wizards does a good job at is making Magic cards and seeing what the public wants. And, you know, this direction is really the direction that I think that most people prefer to play Magic, and they love casting some big dude, and they like when the big creatures are good. And, you know, in the end, that's going to be what's best probably for the long-term, you know, survival of Magic, you know, for it to continue to grow. And, I mean, I can't even believe that it's, you know, been around for 20 years now, and it, you know, it really looks like it's going to still be around 20 years from now. And a lot of that is going to have to do with Wizards giving the average Magic player, you know, what the Magic players want.
Thanks to John Finkel to coming on this episode of Inside the Magic Studio with your host, Robert Martin. Sometimes you get really lucky and learn more about people than you thought. One of the things that amazed me was how humble John was about a success. And maybe that extends into the fact of who his friends are and how important it is for him to continue playing Magic. If you'd like to reach the show, you can contact me at themagicstudio1@gmail.com or on Twitter under themagicstudio. Or my personal account, The Beamy. Again, I'd like to thank GatheringMagic.com for hosting the podcast and Cool Stuff, Inc.